Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Gary Gramling.
I'm Jenny Prentice.
And I'm Connor Orr.
And we have two Sundays left in the 2021 regular season here, but we're running down week 16, and I think this is a first for the show. We're going to start this one off in the 1 o'clock window with the Bills-Patriots rematch here, the AFC East battle for supremacy, and this time it goes Buffalo's way.
We're actually doing a service to the people who live in the New York market and don't have a specialized NFL subscription service, because the two games on, if you live in the New York market, were Jets-Jaguars and Giants-Eagles. So if you're a New York-based listener and you didn't watch Bills-Patriots, this podcast is here for you.
much closer ending in Jets-Jaguars. Some might argue the better game after all.
You could have either watched Jets, Jaguars, Giants, Eagles, or if you were like me, and on Christmas, your son threw out the remote to the television, you could not watch any game at all. So we had to get creative over here. So.
Okay. That's a good move, though. I'm glad your just-turned one-year-old son is really... I mean, he's making a statement about how Christmas is time for family, and I like that.
True.
Also, evidently, good, you know, hand... skills, good coordination, grasping, throwing. I mean, this could be a future athlete on your hands.
If anyone listening to the podcast seriously knows how I can operate my TV without a remote, though, please write into the show, because it's making my job very hard to do.
The MMQB at gmail.com if you know how to work a cable box without a remote in 2021. All right, so we're going with the Bills-Patriots here to lead off. And look, this is, we know what happened on the Monday night, the windswept game a couple of weeks ago. And, what are we going to see out of this Bills defense this time around? They held up okay. Matt Jones had one of his worst games of the season. I didn't think it was disastrous, and I do think they had some issues just catching the ball at a lot of moments. But they didn't have a whole lot going on offensively. But I guess I want to start on the other side of the ball with Josh Allen, for the second straight time, goes up to Foxborough in December, and this defense just doesn't really have a whole lot of answers for him right now.
Yeah, Gary, I'm glad you started there, because I think that was the more troubling thing for the Patriots, because this team is designed to be a balanced team. You know, you have a strong run game, you support the rookie quarterback, you have a good defense on the other side of the ball, an excellent scoring defense, but the Bills didn't punt a single time in this game. That was the first time in Bill Belichick's tenure as a head coach that the opponent has not punted once. And so because they couldn't get the Bills off the field, it put the offense in a much more difficult position. And that's coming off a week in which couldn't stop Jonathan Taylor, even though you knew Jonathan Taylor was going to be running. So for this team, you know, they're still in good position to make the playoffs, but for this team to be a factor in the postseason, I think the defense is really going to have to figure out what's going wrong. And, you know, a lot of these plays, I mean, you noticed it on the key fourth down conversion that Josh Allen made, and it was true last week in the game-clinching run by Jonathan Taylor. There were players in position to make a play. They just didn't make the tackle.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that this was still, I mean, it was a good Josh Allen performance. It was still an imperfect Josh Allen performance, but I thought what was interesting that kind of, at least to me, broke the game open for Buffalo and made things a little bit more difficult for the Patriots was Isaiah McKenzie and, like, the way that they utilized him and, like, where did this guy come from? Like, you were looking at the snap counts towards the beginning of the season. I think his high this year was 20 snaps, and you use him in jet motion. You kind of get him in position where he can be a running back, a slot receiver. He was picking up first downs. He caught that touchdown pass. That diversifies the offense in a way that we haven't seen all year and sort of makes them a little bit more flexible pre-snap. I thought that was brilliant and maybe something that, you know, again, Bill Belichick's prepared for everything, but you don't think that, you know, seldom used special teams player is all of a sudden going to come in and start doing all this stuff.
Like his career highs coming into this game were 6 catches and 65 yards. And you wonder how he would have factored in the game plan if Cole Beasley was not out on the COVID reserve list. And Isaiah McKenzie kind of stepped up in his absence and had to fill that role that Cole Beasley would normally fill. And if you're the Patriots, you're probably looking at this and saying, okay, well, you know, we're going to devote our coverage to Stephon Diggs. Still, Stephon Diggs sort of got his, for the most part, in this one. And, you know, we're going to single up Miles Bryant on Isaiah McKenzie, and that's going to be, at worst, a stalemate. But instead, McKenzie, he was targeted 12 times. He had 11 catches for 125 and the touchdown you mentioned, Connor. The one incompletion was a very near catch. It was a diving attempt, just sort of came out as he was hitting the ground. So, this was a really impressive performance by a guy who you now kind of look at and say, okay, no Cole Beasley, no Gabriel Davis in this one either. And all of a sudden, you just have a level of depth with this Bills receiving core that maybe we didn't really know they had before.
I would go as far as to give him, he had, 1, 2, 3, 4. He had 5 carries coming into the game, but he looked like adept as a ball carrier coming out of the backfield. Like, I would have handed him the ball a couple more times just to, like, I don't know, put that on film, because at this point, like, Cole Beasley can't do that for you, right? But I think Isaiah McKenzie could. Like, he's a ball carrier, and Jenny and I have talked about this. I mean, I remember talking about this before the season started a bunch, that the Bills weren't doing enough to diversify their weapons. They weren't putting enough different things on film and new guys on the field, and all of a sudden, like, it's weird that, like, this fifth round draft pick from 4 years ago is all of a sudden kind of surfaced, and happenstance, I think, is really nicely diversifying things.
Yeah, because so much of the offense is on Josh Allen week to week, and you're just kind of looking for other players to step up and shoulder a little bit more of the load. And so for them to be able to make a deep playoff run, they're going to need a little bit more than Josh Allen's heroics. And so I think it is an encouraging sign anytime you can get a spark from anywhere else on that offense.
Boy, you said it, Jenny, though. No punts, no turnovers for the Bills. Their one fourth down failure was a fourth and goal from the one, and it was actually a ball that, Emmanuel Sanders, he was open, and it was right in his hands. I'm not sure how he dropped it. So this could have been out of hand early. Instead, it ends up being, a fairly interesting game going in the fourth quarter here. The Bills did need to put together that last drive to sort of hang on to it here, but as far as the Patriots go, I remain curious to see how Mac Jones plays in the cold weather. I don't think it's something to overplay, but I think it's really interesting because there was that long period where you guys are probably too young for this. You were, I think, in preschool at this point, but when Peyton Manning used to go into Foxborough in the postseason, and it was always like they just get out physicaled, and like the Colts offense just didn't really function there because they were just sort of the warm weather dome type of team up there. And Mac Jones is a guy who, again, played his high school football in Florida, played his college football at Alabama, where he was a one-year starter, and I'm just curious to see how he reacts down the stretch here and what's going to be basically, unless the Colts end up hosting a game, pretty much everyone in the playoffs in the AFC is a cold weather northern team at this point. So, he was not as bad as his numbers indicate in this game. They did have a couple of drops. He threw a late prayer interception, but, this was not the guy who in mid-November was kind of like, are we going to be talking about Mac Jones in the MVP conversation?
Yeah, I think he's hit a little bit of that rookie bump, and I think that's probably expected at this point in the season. But you make a really good point, Gary, that the cold weather adds an additional wrinkle. So as he's trying to work through that rookie wall, he also has this additional factor of trying to play in conditions that he's not used to playing in.
I don't know if Mac Jones is as soft as the Mannings, Gary. That's a little harsh, but I'll say this for Mac Jones, though, before we move on. It was that late hit when he slid during the game, and then they threw the penalty flag, and there was that like miniature fracas that broke out afterwards. Just expert flailing and sort of like playing dead almost after he got hit. Like, I've never seen a rookie that adept at like just sort of flopping around after that. Like, that was just... just chef's kiss moment from Mac Jones.
Followed by the lengthy check of the knee brace. He had it all.
Yeah, he's going to be fine.
Washington Cowboys.
All right, and we should mention before we go on, the robot did return 2 negative tests on COVID, so he is out of protocol and back introducing the games this week. But we are going with a Sunday night one right now, and my goodness, it was just spectacularly lopsided. By halftime, the Cowboys had already rolled up 42 points and 388 yards of offense, which is, I mean, this is like... You know, this is when the SEC teams play, like, the Sun Belt teams in, like, that first week in November, and it's, like, Alabama against, I don't know, I don't want to insult a Sun Belt team, like an Arkansas State-type opponent, and they just physically overwhelmed them. This is what the Cowboys did to the Washington football team in this game.
Yeah, I mean, they had 2 takeaways right off the bat in the first quarter. Trevon Diggs back at it, hallmark of the Cowboys defense all season long. But look, they're a team that already wrapped up the NFC East going into the night game, but clearly wanted to put an exclamation point on that. They were clearly ready to win the division title, even if they didn't have to by the time the game kicked off, and they played like a team that wanted to make a statement.
Tremendously insulting to the Arkansas State Red Wolves and head coach Butch Jones. Butch Jones would have had the boys fighting tonight. I don't know. I don't think it would have been this bad, but my goodness. Yeah. I mean, the NFC East is a mess. I mean, Washington, I think, overplayed their, like, I don't know what you would count their Pythagorean win-loss or whatever. That thing is, I mean, I think they had outplayed themselves to a certain point this year, especially after Chase Young went down. I mean, they had a couple of those signature wins, but at this point, I think this is just about packing it in and finding a quarterback.
I want to make 2 quick points. Number one, I was right. Arkansas State was 2-10 this year. I will absolutely insult them. I don't know if they played Alabama, but they were.
It's a rebuilding year.
They were bad this season. As far as this game goes, the question mark with the Cowboys has been, Dak Prescott. He has a calf injury, and he hasn't quite looked like himself the past couple of weeks. And again, it's essentially, 30 minutes of somewhat competitive football in which he was out there tonight, but he was on target. He was in rhythm, and they kind of did whatever they wanted here, and... I don't know if it's necessarily a world-beating, we're not talking about, like, the 2015 Broncos or something like that with this defense, but DeMarcus Lawrence is back, and now you have DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons and a pass rush that can create takeaway opportunities, and as Jenny mentions, you have Trevon Diggs back there to take advantage of those opportunities, and it just really, boy, it's just feeling like a really complete team right now.
Sneaky, like, I don't know. I because the last time I said this about a team, I caused a lot of waves and issues on this podcast, but like I think that, like, it could be like a sneaky Super Bowl contender, right? I mean, if things get weird in the playoffs and stuff starts to scramble a little bit, like, I wouldn't hate that matchup against, like, Green Bay, and seeing Dak Prescott is just so good and so efficient, and while he's had a bit of a down year this year, understandably coming back from the injury and stuff, I think he can round into form by the time you hit the playoffs, and certainly played well tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think the team's renaissance on defense has totally turned them around from where they were last year, and you figured Prescott would come back after his injury and the offense would be pretty good. And they've had a couple rough spots this season, but they've been pretty good for the most part. But the defense has been fantastic. So the pairing of those two together, I agree with you, Connor. I think they could probably go toe-to-toe with anyone in the NFC.
I think if you took the 4 division leaders right now in the NFC, which is Packers, Bucks, Rams, Cowboys, maybe you do end up, sort of power ranking the Cowboys 4th out of that group. I think I did power rankings last week. I think I had them 4th overall and 2nd among that group behind only Packers. But absolutely. I don't even know if it's sneaky anymore. I think they're there. I think that's the kind of team they are at this point.
I know how much you like those power rankings,
Gary. I was just going to say, you begrudgingly did power rankings last week, so.
Love them.
If I were a team looking for, Dan Quinn is not getting a lot of buzz at this point. Like the early Sunday splash reports were saying that Doug Peterson and, Jim Caldwell were going to be some of the first names out of the gate there to be interviewing for jobs. But Dan Quinn, I think just the job that he's done there has been spectacular. I mean, it's just an obvious what was wrong with that team and what got fixed. I mean, to bring that guy in and to see what you do there, you know, you pair him with David Culley and you go win yourself a Super Bowl.
No, I agree, Connor. And, you know, one thing is, I think one of the narratives I heard was coaches who have taken a year off or taken some time away for the game, that's good. And I do think in some cases that's necessary. I think oftentimes you see a head coach who loses their job go right to another head coaching job like Rex Ryan did, and that ends up being a mistake. However, Dan Quinn is a different situation. He went back to coaching, but not as a head coach, right? He was willing to go back to being a coordinator, getting back involved in the defense, like he came up at the game, and he's really excelled in that role. So I think that should count for something. Like, he was willing to go back and do that work a tier below his last job, and he's done it exceptionally well, has totally transformed that unit. They're taking the ball away. They're playing with confidence. You know, they're making use of all the pieces that they have. So I think he absolutely should be in the mix again.
Chargers, Texans.
All right, we've arrived at the upset of the day. I'm going to call Jaguars Bills the upset of the season, but this was something of a stunner, maybe just because when the Jaguars knocked off the Bills, it was such a horrifically played and officiated game. It just sort of turned into, you know, this isn't even football that anyone is participating in. And in a way, the final score didn't matter. Everyone lost in that game. But this was a game where the Texans just downright, they outclassed the Chargers in this one. They absolutely steamrolled them down in Houston, a 41-29 victory, which, you know, we'll start on the Chargers side of it. I mean, it puts their postseason hopes in peril here. They have some work to do over the last 2 weeks now.
What is going on with the Chargers defense, I think, is the number one question. Because Brandon Staley is a defensive head coach. He was in part hired because this scheme was supposed to be excellent against the top offenses in the NFL. And then here they are allowing Rex Burkhead to rush for 149 yards and score 2 touchdowns. So I think that's where I'd like to start. Yes, they were without players like Joey Bosa on the COVID list, but this has been a recurring issue the last few weeks. And, you know, as good as Justin Herbert has been at times, and yes, he had some mistakes in this game, obviously, but, you know, the defense has really been porous, and that's made it harder for the Chargers to win games.
Well, Jenny, you said it. It's a defense that's effective against the top offenses in the NFL. It's ineffective against the offenses that are bad, and so that's kind of where we break down here. But this game responsible for my favorite moment of Sunday, and you know, just like so, what I do during the day is wait for things to happen and write about them. And after the Houston Texans upset the Chargers, I sent a message to editor Mitch, and I said, starting writing, David Culley, coach of the year, ? And editor Mitch said, no. And so we fought about that for a little while, and he wouldn't let me do that. So, I just do that here when Mitch doesn't let me do it on our website. But
I'm glad that we can be the, you know, receptacle for all of your bad takes.
I'm not saying he should be considered for coach of the year, but 4 wins is phenomenal with this roster. Is it not? Like, that is ridiculous.
No, I like this Connor or B side right here.
Yeah.
And again, no one's going to vote for him. You can't, you know, if they finish 4-13, you can't vote a 4-13 coach of the year. But we were talking about them. Would they be the first 17 loss team in NFL history based on that roster? I think you could say sort of wins above expectation. It's at least +2. It's probably +3 at this point. They've already matched last year's total when Deshaun Watson was still in the lineup for the Texans. yeah, I mean, I don't particularly suspect he's a good coach, but, you know, they sort of gathered some veterans, and, you know, they're playing hard, and they have four wins. That's stunning.
Well, I would argue, like, okay, so yeah, I'm not saying he's like Sean Payton or whatever, but I'm saying, like, by virtue of, if you have veterans playing hard at that point in the season, that alone makes you, like, I think at least somewhat of a decent coach. But what's going to be interesting is, like, spin it a couple weeks forward. Like, everything that people are talking about in the head coaching world at this point, revolves around the fact that, like, the Texans kind of already, you know, it seemed like there was somebody that they wanted to have this job, like, even before the year started, and Culley seemed to be kind of a holdover. But, like, how could you reasonably let him go, given the roster that you put there? And he essentially, if he wins one more game, he's won as many games with a garbage roster like this as Brian Flores did in his first year with Miami. And, you know, we were all talking about how phenomenal of a job that was. And, you know, I just think optically, like, what a horrendous thing to do to the guy, you know? And I think this was, like, as good as you could have possibly imagined it could be.
Boy, I think the solution is you just, whatever his buyout was going to be, you just, like, triple it and, like, call it a retirement and go from there, or whatever, bump him up to some sort of weird consultant role or something like that.
Owner.
It really is wild, though, that this team is competing, and I guess no one really prepares for Rex Burkhead when it's all said and done. But yeah, he ended up, these are staggering. 22 for 149 for Burkhead. You take out the kneel down, this is 35 for 190 for this rushing offense. They control the clock for nearly 35 minutes. I mean, that's somewhat lopsided. And then obviously you get, a pretty well-managed game from Davis Mills, who is probably your guy. I mean, I would think he's your guy next year at this point, considering the QB class coming in. I don't know if any of those guys are clearly upgrades over Davis Mills at this point. And then, you can do whatever you want with that draft capital, trade down or add, I don't know. I don't know who they get in the sort of four or five range at this point, Kyle Hamilton type or something. But yeah, I don't know. Things aren't going well for the Texans franchise, but I guess things aren't quite, they're like a quarter step above rock bottom now. That's something.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to give some kudos to Davis Mills. He's put in a difficult situation. Nobody expects him to play capably, and this was a really good win for him.
Yeah, there's one prominent media member who is very much calling out the Texans for tanking when they put Davis Mills in the lineup over Tyrod Taylor, and it looks like they might actually have something in their quarterback here at this point. I do just want to bring up with the Chargers real quick. Their front seven, it's not very good. And Joey Bosa is obviously a star. They didn't have Joey Bosa because of the COVID reserve list this week, but it's just been a really bad group up front outside of Bosa, and I feel like that was exposed more than anything in this game. And I don't really know. I mean, even adding Bosa back, it's just not a very good group up front.
Ravens, Bengals.
So the Bengals now control the AFC North, and they do it behind just an overwhelming performance from Joe Burrow and this offense in this one, as they win this one 41-21 over the Ravens, and Burrow ends up 525 yards on 46 throws. That's 11.41 per attempt. And granted, this Ravens secondary is injury ravaged. Anthony Averett went down in this one, so they're super thin back there. But still, this is just spectacular football being played by Joe Burrow right now.
Yeah, and the weird thing is, like, he's still getting the crap beaten out of him, right? And the right side of that offensive line is still really bad. Like, the left side's okay, but even the first snap of the game, it's non-exotic four-man pressure, and he takes like a full-on shot by a defensive lineman, rolls out, stumbles, recovers, and completes a pass 10 yards downfield. Like, in traffic. And he's just having a phenomenal season this year. I think he came into the game the second most sacked quarterback in the NFL next to Ryan Tannehill. I'm sure there's a lot more hits that didn't equate to sacks that he's been taking. And that was the reason that we were so down on the Bengals, or at least I was. I'm not going to put words in anybody else's mouth at the beginning of the year, because you had this guy who was clearly recovering from a knee issue that he was hesitant on in training camp and felt kind of weird being on the field still, admittedly, and he's completely put that behind him. I don't know how he's done that as well as he's done that.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, Connor, that he's done this just 1 year after tearing his ACL. I mean, oftentimes the first year back from the ACL injury, particularly one that happened mid-season, is not the best. That usually takes another year for the player to completely round into form, but you wouldn't even have thought by looking at the way Joe Burrow was playing that a year ago he had a season-ending serious knee injury. And he's lifted the Bengals up in the way that we expected when he was drafted number one overall. It's just we had to wait to sort of see that. They've swept both the Ravens and the Steelers, which is remarkable. And I think there's just this confidence that he brings the team because they know he can make these incredible plays, even when the circumstances around him aren't perfect, as you described with the line, Connor.
I was griping to you guys before the show about how Joe Burrow is not listed among the MVP favorites that you can bet right now. Not that I would bet, but I was just take a peek at those because I'm always curious. It blows my mind that he's not up there. I think you can make an argument that he's number two right now. I would pick Tom Brady one just because he's serving as basically quarterback and head coach and offensive coordinator and apparently general manager of his own team. But I would put Burrow in that conversation on that second tier. I think his lows have... He's had two really bad games, the loss at Chicago early on. He also had a dud against the Browns in early November. I think those two games are not the lows that some of these other MVP contenders have hit this year. And, he is just... It's not an offense that does a ton of favors for a young quarterback. They don't run a lot of play action. They are very talented at the skill position, but obviously they're not great up front. And he's a superstar at this point. I think he absolutely belongs in that MVP conversation.
Broncos Raiders.
All right, so the Raiders are still alive in this thing, despite everything that has happened to this team over the last 3 months here. They are still hanging around here. They beat the Broncos at home, finished the season sweep, really put Denver behind the eight ball as far as playoff contention goes at this point. But, my goodness, they just in the past 6 days won two really ugly, sort of low-scoring games here, but... I don't know. There's just a certain resilience with this team at this point.
Yeah, and I don't know what you do at this point. I mean, the history of rehiring interim head coaches that have had success is pretty dreadful. But what Rich Bisacci has done in this situation, given all that has happened to them, has been nothing short of fantastic. And whether you want to say that the offensive coordinator's kind of taken a bigger step forward with John Gruden gone and been allowed to kind of make some more sensible decisions on that end, I don't know. But this team is just, I can't give them enough credit for keeping them afloat and giving them a heartbeat at this point.
Yeah, Connor, I think that's a really interesting question about what the path forward is, because there have been some smart coaching decisions late in the game. They had that 3rd and 2, and maybe you'd expect a run, a short yardage play, but instead Greg Olsen dials up this 28-yard pass to Foster Moreau, and then that allows the Raiders to kneel out the game. But they have the same record as the Chargers, so they're still very much alive this year. I mean, there's a lot of big questions looming in the offseason, but definitely not out of the playoff race for this season.
It's particularly difficult for me because I've had to really carefully word how I compliment them moving forward so as to avoid giving any credit to John Gruden for, maybe some of the personnel decisions that he made that had led them to this point of success. I don't know, or the offensive playbook that they still are probably using, but just kidding. But yeah, I, 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 uh, I think that this team, you know, I would probably like to see them in the playoffs. Like if I'm the two seed, like I'm like, please Raiders get in. Like that's probably who I want. But that said, I think this has been one of Derek Carr's best seasons in a really long time. I think there's something to be said for that. The staff getting the most out of him at this point in his career, and doing sort of uncharacteristic things that he hasn't done in terms of, you know, I think he's done more late in games this year. I think he's been physically tougher, you know, has had some of those kind of signature moments. So I think there's a lot to like about this Raiders team.
Steelers Chiefs.
All right, so the Chiefs make it, I believe it's 8 straight wins now to move to 11-4. Yeah. And this one was this one was so bad. It was one of the games that, you know, it was the national game at 4:25 Eastern, and they had to cut away from it. And they had to cut away from it, like, early in the fourth quarter, too, because it was just it was never competitive at any point. And I don't know how much you draw out of the Chiefs' performance here, because it was just such a spectacularly ugly performance from Steelers' team that really, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger in the offense is like the headliner here for how bad things have gone for Pittsburgh, but it's really almost like the real culprit is the fact that the defense doesn't tackle anyone anymore. And that's been like, I don't know. I don't know if it's a bigger issue, but it's also a really big issue. They're just bad on both sides of the ball right now.
Yeah, I would definitely try tackling. Maybe that's the first thing that they could get going here. Still like a 12-15% chance of making the playoffs. Oddly, like this division that they're in is sort of like the reverse NFC East, where like the teams are all like kind of not great record-wise, but are all really good and trying hard versus, you know, like whatever we see from them. But just a strange, uncharacteristic performance. We said last week that Ben Roethlisberger does have that sort of Tin Man vibe going on where he gets the oil can, and some kind listener did confirm to us that yes, that's what happens in Wizard of Oz. You hit the oil can on the Tin Man and he becomes more limber. He has those moments where he's in the thick of things, and then, but I've just never seen someone who, like, you know, you're not playing after this, and there's just this disinterested, like a switch just turns off, like, you know, sometimes halfway through these games, and it's just like, forget about it.
Well, I would dispute one thing that you said, Gary, and that we can't take away much from the Chiefs' performance, because I was impressed by the offense. This was an offense playing without Travis Kelce, who's on the COVID-19 list. And generally, Travis Kelce is kind of the, what's the saying? The straw that stirs the drink. He makes the offense go. He's Patrick Mahomes' most trusted target. So you would think that things, especially for an offense that has been a little bit off kilter, or at least in the early part of the season was, that maybe things would fall apart without Kelce on the field. But they were incredible. I mean, certainly you're not expecting that Patrick Mahomes will have more than 7 seconds to throw a touchdown pass as he did to the one touchdown to Pringle. But, you know, sometimes you just have to create plays, keep them alive, you know. So I was encouraged overall by the offensive performance. And I am also really looking forward, as a side note, since we're coming off talking about the Bengals, to the Bengals-Chiefs matchup next week.
The reason that the Chiefs were so successful without Travis Kelce was because of, if you're just new to this pod, go all the way back to the summer when we talked about X Factors.
Oh, man.
Fifth round pick Noah Gray, the tight end. We're talking about it in the summer. And by the way, my NFC South X Factor, Ian Book, is starting a game when this podcast comes out. So everything's coming up, Connor, right now.
And Michael Badgley also kicked in a game.
There you go. Colts have been the best team in football since they got Badgley.
Rams, Vikings.
All right, so we go out to Minnesota now, where the Rams get a 30-23 win. Just sort of a weird game because a lot of uncharacteristic things from the Rams here. They did play well defensively. That's not unusual. Matthew Stafford was shaky in this one. He had 3 interceptions. One of them was very reminiscent of the sort of ugly performance he had in the Sunday night loss to the Titans earlier this season, where he just, I don't know what it was. He sort of slung a late in the down sidearm throw to the flat where a flat defender was just standing there to catch it. And then he underthrew a deep shot later that ended up getting picked off. It was an off day for Stafford, but between the defense, between the run game, and they've kind of been shaky on special teams for a while, but they even got a punt return touchdown in this one to sort of hold off the Vikings. And yeah, it's, you know, looks like full speed ahead for the Rams at this point.
If I were Mike Zimmer, I think, or if I were Sean McVay, rather, I think I would be like sort of mad at Mike Zimmer because, you know, we talk about like blueprint games, and while Cooper Kupp still had a really good day, I think there were a lot of things defensively that the Vikings did with limited resources to throw him off his, you know, where he was supposed to be, you know, because him and Stafford are so kind of unconscious with that timing. But I think there were some really neat things that he did with limited resources to impact the passing game, which then affects Stafford, where I think if you're McVay, you're like, oh, shoot, like, I really wish that wasn't out there, because I think that there are probably some teams that are going to throw that in, especially come playoff time. And I think we've all sort of assumed that, like, some of these dominant receiving performances in the past, whether it be like a Rob Gronkowski or a Kelce, like, if you can effectively remove him or at least negate him from the game plan, everything else just sort of blows out the window a little bit.
I thought you were going to make the transition line of, speaking of the straws that stir the drink,
Cooper
Kupp in the Rams offense. But yeah, you know, the Rams are going to the playoffs. They've secured a playoff berth. They still seem capable of anything, but at the same time, they still seem very apt to these brain fart type performances. And maybe a lot of that's Matthew Stafford can have these plays like you described, Gary. Like, do you wonder sometimes with quarterbacks if, you know how there's like a word that you always have trouble spelling? Like, I know for Connor, it is Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Is that one? I mean, I think that's true for a lot of people. I also have many, and of course they're escaping my brain. So now it looks like I'm singling Connor out for his poor spelling, but I lost in the first round of the spelling bee, so I'm not a good speller either. In any event, like, are there just like certain throws that you think for a quarterback always you trip up on them?
Like, you don't quite properly calibrate what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Or it's like always your blind spot, or it's always, you know, you always forget to look in this certain place, or, you know.
I think there's no doubt about that. You know, you could probably, you know, trace that back to like when they were in grade school or high school, and like there's a kid over there on the left that's just terrible, and so you're programmed to just like scan a certain way. But yeah, I also got knocked out in the first round of the spelling bee. I was actually just talking about this with my family over Christmas. I remember looking at my parents in the back of the auditorium, third grade, and the word was balloon. Said B-A-L-L-O-O, and I just was looking at my mom, and she was clapping, and she was, like, crying, and I said W-N, and the whole place just, like, it was like you just sucked the air out of the building.
Showered with booze.
Yeah, you popped the balloon, literally, and still haven't lived that one down. When I was home for Christmas, we had a balloon, and my sister said, hey, to my daughter, she said, hey, ask your dad to spell that, and so, yeah, I never lived that down. Cincinnati restaurant is another one that I can't do. And then I tweeted this the other day, but Garoppolo, I was on a 2-year streak where I was completely fine with Garoppolo. But, you know, what happens is if you second guess it once, then it just implodes the rhythm. And so I was like, is there another P? Is there another L? And now I'm back to square one with Jimmy Garoppolo, too.
Oh, I do not have a misspelled word, sorry, because I don't misspell words, but
the typical editor.
Gosh, though.
I will send you, because Kalen Kaler had the same block on Cincinnati. I will send you the Simpsons clip that will allow you to forever spell that word correctly going forward. Mm. But before we move on, I just want to mention real quick a very neat fact about this game. Both teams exactly 30 minutes, 0 seconds of possession. Very
no slow. Way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's history, maybe. I don't know.
If John Harbaugh was coaching one of those teams, he would have done something weird to technically just win possession. You know, that would have been something that would have bothered him. Don't you think so?
Frantically trying to force overtime so he can.
Yeah, just like hold on. I don't know why. Well, I know why. Well, John Harbaugh did the thing with the 100-yard rushing streak, but also they had joint practices with the Eagles back when Chip Kelly was there, and I was covering that back when I worked for NFL Network, and I remember somebody asking John Harbaugh what he thought of time of possession, which was a very loaded question because really it was, what do you think of Chip Kelly, right? And so I remember him doing like a big, like grandiose eye roll and saying, well, we think it's very important here, you know, basically as like, you know, take that, Chip Kelly, kind of thing. So I don't know why that was why John Harbaugh was my example there.
But I do wonder, getting back to the Rams, I do wonder, you know, they're kind of built as this like spread out team built for speed, right? And do you think they struggle maybe a little bit more against physical teams? Is that also part of it? I mean, certainly with the Titans loss, that came to mind. And
49ers.
Yeah, I'm just trying to assess who these Rams are, right? Because it just seems like in any given week, they could beat anybody or lose to anybody. And I'm just having a hard time. You know, they haven't had the wild swings maybe that some teams like your upset of the year has had, Gary. But I just, maybe because the expectations were so high, that I'm just having a hard time getting a handle on them.
Browns Packers.
All right, so we are going back to Saturday, Christmas Day, and the doubleheader we had. And we're starting with the Packers-Browns. Look, the Packers obviously get the victory in this one, and you know they continue to lead the NFC, and it looks like they are on pace with number one seed. If you're going to be somewhat nitpicky, I don't know. I think this almost goes a little bit beyond nitpicky. I thought this was kind of a problematic performance from the defense for a second straight week here. And look, I don't have to tell Packers fans. I mean, your nightmare is basically having a third straight year where you get to the NFC title game and the defense just collapses in some way.
I hate to put this on anybody, right? I mean, you never want to, you know, but you're one, like, Devondre Campbell sprained ankle away from being, like, kind of not a bad defense, but, like, a defense that really and truly struggles. And I think the scheme is certainly tighter. You know, they had to make a change at defensive coordinator, and I think that's helped. And I think, like, guys like Eric Stokes are coming around. I think they're playing better. But that said, that you know, you can't have four interceptions and make this a two-point game at the end of the game. And, you know, I think to John Johnson's point, the Browns safety tweeted it. Like, if the Browns ran the ball at the end of that game, they'd probably kick a game-winning field goal.
Yeah, I mean, that was what was surprising, the Browns play calling. And, you know, now we're veering off into another subject. But why not stick with the ground game? They were having success on the ground. Why did they stray from the ground game when the game was on the line?
I don't know. Don't ask me. Yeah.
Gary, you're supposed to have answers for Kevin Stefanski.
It was, boy, it's just been such a long year for Baker, who, you know, obviously we have all these questions about, will they commit to him? You'd say at this point, probably not. I mean, the season's not over. And look, the Browns still are at a point where if it goes chalk in week, what do we have coming up? Week 17. If it goes chalk and the Browns beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh, they will play the Bengals for the AFC North title in week 18 in their own building. That's a Bengals team that already beat on the road. So it's not over for them. And again, it just in a five-day span, you know, you have to play your third quarterback and you end up losing on a last-second field goal to the Raiders. And then you go into Lambeau and you play well enough to win. It's just like, and if you're going to tally up the four interceptions, it's funny. Baker was not completely at fault. He threw one really bad ball that was picked off. Other than that, you had, you know, probably a penalty on the last play. It should have been on Rasul Douglas, but you also had one early in the game where Rasul Douglas essentially tackled a guy, disrupting a route, and that turned into an interception. And then the other one was Jarvis Landry falling down. However, Baker Mayfield just played really poorly. Like, his throws in between those interceptions were just not good enough for the most part. And I don't know. It's just, it's really tough to trust him. And you almost feel like it's trending that direction, where it's going to be like Matt Nagy with Mitchell Trubisky a couple of years ago, where it's like, boy, we can't ask him to throw the ball, you know, further than 5 yards up the field. It's just going to be a lot of screens, a lot of quick in-breaking stuff, and let's survive this, and then just let the run game do the rest of it.
Do you want to hear my, like, outrageously, like there's a lot of layers to my Baker take, but I don't want to devote too much time on the podcast to this, and you can just say no, and we can move on, too.
Yes.
I'm totally okay with that.
I agree. I would like to hear this.
Okay. First off, I think if you take his numbers, like, so I did his numbers for the first, whatever, 46 games of his career. That was the cutoff was the Houston game week two when he injured his shoulder, right? And he has basically on par to, or in some ways better, like, beginning career than Russell Wilson statistically. Like, he's not bad. And I think what's weird is everybody is, like, just assuming that this is going to be this steady ascension from a guy who was completely thrown into the swamp since the second he got here, right? You had Hugh Jackson, you had Freddie Kitchens, you had, I mean, the organization was incompetent and bungling up until the moment that Kevin Stefanski got there, right? And so he had the one good season with Kevin Stefanski, and I just think we all have this idea of who we think Baker Mayfield is because he came from the Lincoln Riley system, he's confident and assertive, and so you create that image of a person, but he was never going to be that guy in the NFL. Like, I think he was going to be, like, you know, sort of a minus Russell Wilson, like a ball control quarterback that was going to make some good throws sometimes and move around, and I don't think he was ever supposed to light the world on fire. I think he was supposed to be a quarterback that's playing in a run-first offense like this, but he's got a banged-up shoulder, so now you're just kind of dealing with a guy that's 50%.
I think what upsets you with Baker Mayfield right now, what you saw this season, is, you know, a lot of this when we talk about, okay, who's a star quarterback, and you're absolutely right, Connor, you know, it's kind of like, what do you do when you are behind the sticks, when you're thrown off schedule by the game flow, and you have to come from behind? Like, what happens when the scheme can no longer lift you up? Because this is a really good scheme that Kevin Stefanski runs, and you know, the play action you can work off of that. It does create a lot of favorable stuff for your quarterback. And what you've seen this year, and again, I think it's I remember talking about this back when they lost to the Chargers in October, and it's too small a sample size to draw a conclusion, but they haven't come back on anyone this year. They haven't come back and won a game that they trailed late. All their games have been, they've grabbed a lead and they've held on to that lead. And I think that's why, you know, again, they're down two, they need to drive for a field goal, and it just doesn't quite get there. And it's happened enough times this year that you just, it's upsetting.
Well, one of the points that I think you made really well, Connor, in your column about Baker is that he has helped them get to this point. They are a much more competent organization now. They are in the mix. They can win the division. They went to the playoffs last season, right? It's a much more exciting era of Browns football. But as a result, then that raises the expectation. So it's not just, can you be a competent quarterback that could lead a team to a 500 record? Now it's, can you be the guy that can win a championship for Cleveland? And in order to do so, you need to be able to win any kind of game, not just one that you control the clock and control the ball in, but as Gary described, one that you have to come back in. And I think that probably is still the outstanding question. And it's a little bit unfair because you're right, they've had such a horrible history at the quarterback position in Cleveland, the jersey with all the different names on the back of it, and they find a guy that is the quarterback of the team in an era when they're really fun to watch and they're an exciting team and they feel like they're headed on the right track. And then all of a sudden, the expectations now have changed. And that's probably unfair to him, but that's also the reality. So I think we'll see the rest of the season. I mean, they have a decision to make in the offseason, and they don't have all the data points yet. So will they be able to win the division? Will they be able to win a playoff game? You know, is this a team that is a contender deep into January? And he still has time to answer some of those questions, but it is unfortunate that he's doing it while injured.
Jenny, unfolding shockingly a little bit like the 2010 Jets when, or 2010, 2011 Jets, when you had Mark Sanchez, he was winning you playoff games, you were still uncertain about what was going on, perhaps some veteran quarterbacks come on the market, you chase them, and then it doesn't go according to plan, and then you got to give the first guy a contract extension that you are regretting, having a hard time getting out of, heed the warnings, Browns, go back and read Jenny Vrentas, circa 2011. Well, start in 2009. She was great the whole time. So, but just go back, heed the warnings, and do what you got to do.
The apology extension, never a great move.
Never.
Colts Cardinals.
All right, in the Saturday night game, really weird one when it was all said and done. But starting on the Colts side of this, and this is what you're excited about if you're a Colts fan, besides the fact that your team is playing really well right now. Number one, this is a team that has to come across country. No Darius Leonard, no Quentin Nelson, two All-Pros out. They lost a couple of other linemen during this game. I think they were down to one regular starter on the front five. They also lost Jack Doyle early in this game, and I don't want to overstate this like Jack Doyle is this generation's Rob Gronkowski, but Jack Doyle is really important to what they do as far as that running scheme goes. He's been really valuable in that area. So Carson Wentz had to do a little bit more lifting than maybe he's had to do some weeks. And if you go over some of the lowlights for this Colts team this season, it tends to come when Carson Wentz has to make sort of second reaction hero ball plays. But in the end, it's actually one of those plays, and Carson Wentz delivers the throw to Desmond Patman, and they get the touchdown to put this game away midway through the fourth quarter. And that was, I mean, look, you're still really hoping you don't have to put too much on Carson Wentz's plate come January and February, but that was a really encouraging moment for a guy who's been, something of a roller coaster this year in his first year as a Colts starter.
Yeah, Carson Wentz has been, for most of the season, looking like the guy that would hold the Colts back. They have pretty much everything else in place, but they haven't been getting as much out of the Carson Wentz reclamation project as they wanted to. But I agree, Gary. This game was a little bit more encouraging in that regard, and maybe there is a higher ceiling than we thought still yet to come this season.
Yeah, I thought there were some spectacular sort of vintage Wentzian plays in that game. I don't know. I think he's at this point, you know, if you have Taylor and you have the running game designed like that, to tie it back into what we were saying about Baker, right? It's like he's playing Baker plus at this point, right? And he's healthy. And based on what we've seen from the last, season and a half of NFL football, that could be good enough to take you quite a long way in the playoffs at this point.
As far as the Cardinals go, the struggles continue. They couldn't find a holder in this game. The regular holder, Andy Lee, was out. Colt McCoy filled in, and I don't know, based on screenshots, apparently did it quite poorly, and they end up moving away from Colt McCoy mid-game, which is never a great sign. And Ryan Winslow takes over, and Prater ends up hitting the upright later. But this is just an offense that they don't have it right now. DeAndre Hopkins is out. It's an offense that's sort of built around creating these mismatches, dictating these matchups for their star players. And there's just not enough talent right now to make it work.
It's weird how similar they are in a lot of ways to the Rams, although, like, different. I mean, the air raid and stuff, and, you're doing a lot of sight adjustments and everything, and so theoretically it's the quarterback-receiver relationship that can bail you out of stuff. But it's weird that both of these teams have so much star power, yet if you remove just one of them from the equation, it just unties like a poorly knotted sneaker.
Yeah, it's setting up the potential for another disappointing finish to the season for the Cardinals. I mean, not yet. They're not at that point yet, but they've certainly stumbled in the last few weeks, and the expectations for them have really changed a lot.
Sneaky thing to look at there is the fact that, Cliff Kingsbury's contract is running out, and his name was, I don't think, not accidentally bandied about for the Oklahoma job when Lincoln Riley left, and nothing was done with it. You know, nothing was made. It, there wasn't really a rebound effort to lock him down there. So I don't know. I think the Cardinals are just as interested as everybody else to see how the remainder of this season plays out.
Buccaneers, Panthers.
So we enter the lightning-ish round with the Bucs and Panthers here, and the story of this one is Antonio Brown's return. I will give you the quote. I'm actually combining this off of tweets from ESPN's Jenna Lane and The Athletic's Greg Allman here, but this was Antonio Brown post-game. "I don't want to talk about that," referring to Bruce Arians basically standing up for him and keep him on the team. "I don't want to talk about that. You guys is all about drama. This is all about football. We just talk about Carolina, or I don't want to talk to you guys. I'm just here to do my job. I can't control what people write, how they try to frame me. People try to bring me down. Life is about obstacles and persevering and doing what's right. I'm standing before you guys grateful, humble, thankful." So again, the enablement of Antonio Brown to this point is, you know, it's what the Bucs have chosen to do. He continues to depict himself as a victim in all these circumstances, which is, you know, not in line with reality at this point. But, you know, Chris Godwin is out for the year. Mike Evans is banged up right now. And Tampa has decided this is the way they are going to go.
And yes, Gary, because of the injuries at the receiver position, Tom Brady is clearly relying on Antonio Brown. And this is clearly why he wants him around for the remainder of the season. He had 10 catches for 100 some yards, and he does a post-game press conference because of his performance. But at the same time, if you're going to meet the media to talk about your performance, then you also have a responsibility to address questions about your absence. There was an NFL investigation that found he misrepresented his vaccination status, thus resulting in a 3-game suspension. So it is fair for him to be asked about any and all of those topics. And I would say that the question that he responded so strongly and rudely to was probably the softest version of the question that could have been asked. It was framed as, "Your coach believed in you. What does it say that he brought you back, even though a year ago he had a one strike and you're out policy?" I mean, there could have been questions about, "Why did you misrepresent your vaccination status? Did you consider that it was a felony? Did you consider that you were putting others in the facility at risk by misrepresenting yourself and therefore not having to follow the same protocols?" I mean, there was a lot of different ways that could have gone. He shut down all questioning. And I think he says that he was humble. The response he gave certainly does not indicate any humility. And unfortunately, the Buccaneers organization has chosen to ignore all of that because they need him to win football games and potentially defend their Super Bowl championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I mean, you know, it's almost like you're just tired of continually saying, like, "Hey, this is a bad guy and you don't want him on your roster." But the bottom line is they're so desperate to win a Super Bowl that a coach who had 3 bouts with cancer and his 83-year-old co-offensive coordinator are willing to stomach an individual who lied about his vaccination status and said he was protected against a disease that killed millions of people when he wasn't. So, like, this is your reality. If that's what you want to do to keep going, that's fine. You're going to keep being asked about it because it's a crappy thing to do. So, good for you. I think there are a lot of people who are probably rooting against you and hoping you fail because of it.
You're also going to keep getting asked about until someone gives a satisfactory answer to any of this.
Yeah, could you, like, even at the worst, like even at the very worst, could you have just lied and said that you found out that you were allergic to one of the ingredients or something? Like, just like have something and don't yell at someone for trying to ask you the nicest version possible of that question. Like, my God. Anyway, let's, you know, whatever.
So Bucks 32, Panthers 6. Let's move on.
Giants, Eagles.
So, I don't know. I really don't know any Eagles fans, at least not well enough to really get their take on what was going on around, like, 2:30 this afternoon. But I don't know. Jake Fromm was out there for the Giants, not doing very well. I mean, he's just not a starting caliber guy in the NFL, and that's the way it goes. But this game was 3-3 at halftime. And on top of that, we know that the Giants upset the Eagles a couple of weeks ago and kind of, maybe spoiled their season just a little bit at that point. And the Eagles just came out in the second half and just they scored 31 unanswered points in about 20 minutes. And that was that. That was, yeah, that's how you close out a game.
I mean, maybe the Eagles might be headed somewhere, right? Which is more so than you can say for their opponent, the Giants. You know, it's been a bumpy season for the Eagles, but Jalen Hurts has shown some good things. Nick Sirianni has shown some good things. They've gotten through some growing pains. So, hey, if you're an Eagles fan, it's not the worst place to be in, and you have a lot of draft picks to continue building your roster next year.
Just to continue the theme of me being silenced whenever I'm trying to talk about David Culley. David Culley would be 10-4 with this Giants roster. Like the Giants have won as many games as the Houston Texans. And what they should do is they should hire David Culley. Just bring him aboard. Have him do anything to ignite this franchise the way that he has ignited the Houston Texans. Yes, David Culley. DC for HC of the NYG.
The fixer. Bring him in.
Well, unfortunately, Connor, the Giants have no plans to make changes at head coach, so guess that won't be possible.
General manager, assistant owner, you know, I just find a way to get Culley in there. Just get Culley in the building and things start changing.
Bears, Seahawks.
So we had a snow game up in Seattle, and the Bears end up winning this one. I wasn't on last week's show, so I didn't talk about it at all. But it was a Monday night game, so you guys didn't get to cover the Bears-Vikings tilt where, I don't know, Matt Nagy was just kind of freaking out a little bit. Just kind of coming a little unhinged. It's sort of stuff you don't quite see from a coach. It looked like he might get tossed at some point. He got an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. And, this is a kind of a nice... If this is the last one for him, this was kind of a nice one. And he goes out there, and they end up getting a touchdown with 61 seconds left. Nick Foles, Jimmy Graham, to pull them within one of the Seahawks, and then they end up going for two because... Let's be honest, we just need to get out of here as far as this game goes. Like, no one should be hanging around for overtime here. And Damaire Bird just made a really spectacular catch on the back line, got his knee down, sort of held it up one hand. I thought it was just kind of a nice moment here for the Bears.
Yeah, I think it doesn't take away, like, if you're a coach, you realize, you go into this realizing, right, that you have a very finite window to make things happen, and unless, you know, the percentage of coaches that last as long as Andy Reid or Bill Belichick or Sean Payton is so slim that I think you just get these little golden moments, and I think that was a nice little capper. It seems reportedly, I think NFL Network had it before the game, that he's going to be not there next year, but I thought that was just a fun thing because it's not just him, right? There's like 100 other guys that work on this to make it happen, and so I'm sure it was pretty neat for everybody to be able to have that one.
Nick Foles pulling out miracles, right? A Bears win in 2021, so there you go.
You know who would be a good option to replace Matt Nagy? And David Culley, next segment.
Oh, boy.
Jaguars, Jets.
All right, so this was, this was kind of everything you wanted it to be. It was a close game, and there was a point where it's like, you know, the Jaguars scored a touchdown early on where it was like a fumble that they ended up falling onto the end zone, and, you know, it was just sort of, you had a kickoff return touchdown. You just sort of had some weird football sort of, this is what bad teams play like. When it's all said and done, I will say I thought Trevor Lawrence equipped himself well in this game, and you know they had a chance to win it late, and it was just such a weird Jaguars-y ending to this, where it's like, They got Lawrence just on second and goal from the five. They have no timeouts left. There's like 30 seconds left. He, you know, basically puts a ball in CJ Mosley's hands. Mosley doesn't catch it. It deflects to Marvin Jones, but he's not in the end zone. And then they run to the line and spike it on third and goal, even though there's like 15 seconds left. And it's just kind of like, oh, God, why? Why are you doing that, guy? Like, just throw a fade or something, even if you don't want to call a play. You have plenty of time to get to the line, get lined up, and do something. And, you know, so they go to fourth and goal, and they don't get it. And also they had an illegal shift on the play, so they can't even, you know. This is a team that doesn't use motion or shifts very often because they apparently just didn't practice a whole lot this summer or whatever, and you know, that's just kind of how it goes.
I know, it's, well, like Urban Meyer's not there anymore, but you can still, you don't have to use his situational playbook or, you know, any of the stuff that he taught you guys during the time before that. You could throw all that out.
Well, you said earlier in the show you don't have any Eagles fans friends. I have several Jets fans friends. One of them is our tremendous guild rep, Jack, who used to work at Sports Illustrated. So I often mention him at this part of the show. And so this week I sent Brian Costello, who covers the Jets for the New York Post, I sent his tweet at 4:17 p.m. Enjoy the win now, lamented in April. And, you know, because of draft order, obviously. And I sent it to Jack and he said, well, I didn't even enjoy it now. And then a few hours later, he writes, okay, not all bad news for Jets draft picks because the Seahawks lost. So, you know, I guess a mixed bag today for Jets fans.
I think if you're a Jets fan, you have to be. I would say this. I think that there is a significant amount of relief. You could hear just this sigh of relief when Zach Wilson had that, like, gigantically long touchdown run. Like, at least there is, like, a moment that you can point to from this season. You know, like, there's like one moment, well, like half the Titans game and this, you know, where you're like, okay, like that's fine. You know, that's good. you know, these are good things. Also very weird, but I was on my way home from ShopRite, this morning. And I was listening to the Jets pregame show, and I think it was Michael Carter, the running back, was on. They did like a Zoom interview with him, and you could barely understand him over the radio. But one of the things that he said when he was not playing was he was watching the games from the coaching booth, and he said that he had a good feeling, or that he was like saying how Braxton Berrios almost pops a lot of returns. And he said that before the game, and he said, like, you know, and so he projected a Braxton Berrios return touchdown. So that was a nice job by the rookie, Michael Carter. Good job.
Nice. That's a big day for Michael Carter. He caught that. He had what? He had 100 yards, right? Yeah, he got to 118. Nice day for Michael Carter.
And, you know, you got the Zach Wilson play, which I was amused during the broadcast that one of the commentators was like, so the one highlight reel play for Zach Wilson this year. And I was like, you know, hold up. He had that pretty awesome throw to Corey Davis in the Titans game, right? So there were some others.
Yes.
There were. Yeah, absolutely.
There were enough that, like, you know, when, like, you try to do you try to do like a little thing where, like, a video for someone where you have to have people say nice things, but like not enough people say nice things, and so you have to stretch out the things that people say to make it like 2 minutes long. It's better than that. Like, he has a better highlight reel than that. So I think that's a good thing for him.
Lions Falcons.
All right, so we're wrapping this show up with the Falcons and the Lions, and I want to be careful how I phrase this, because I have the utmost respect for the men who I watch out on the field while I sort of sit on my couch and eat whatever candy corn I can find this time of year when it's no longer in season. I hate watching this Falcons team. And Kyle Pitts is spectacular, and I have a lot of respect for Matt Ryan. A.J. Terrell is a great young player. I just hate watching them. They're just not very good, and they have 7 wins somehow, and it seems like every time they're in a close game they win it, and then every other game they just get their doors blown off. But that's my Falcons take. That's it. Worst 7-win team in NFL history, and I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm behind you on that. I would say, like, I'm, you know, kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel here to find some stuff to comment on, but Two things that I enjoyed were Kyle Pitts had a couple of big catches and then broke like a certain threshold for rookie tight ends. And the announcer was like, he joins the elite company of Evan Engram. And
it's like, Jeremy
Shockey. And I was like, I don't know. That doesn't seem to instill that much confidence in me. But I loved, I know I'm an easy mark. I know that the Lions brought in Dan Campbell to fool people like me, and it's working. But to get pushed back on a false start on 4th and 1, and then just fake a punt after that was just like so amazing. It was just like button mashing on Madden, and like you're asking Madden what to do, and he's saying please punt, and you're just like no, I'm angry, and it worked, and it was just phenomenal, and I've really enjoyed watching him coach football this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you're below Jets Jaguars in the lightning round, it's a low place to be. So, but it yeah, is, I'm with yeah. you. I'm with you. Kyle Pitts is fun to watch. Probably one of the bright spots for this Falcons season.
Go ahead, Connor.
I don't want to put words in Gary's mouth because he lined up the show, but I would say that the only reason that the Falcons were below the Jets was probably because the Jets and the Jaguars got elevated by virtue of it being the top two quarterbacks. Like, there was a thing there.
Right? Yeah.
And so there was, like, the game was sort of crappy marquee, you know? So it would be, like, the best, your best Hallmark movie, you know, kind of thing, you know?
It's like the future. You get a glimpse of the future in that game. And we'll look back in when Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson meet up for another AFC title game, like their 7th in a row, we'll be like, oh, remember that first time they met? And Zach Wilson had that run where it looked like, boy, it was a long run, but it looked like the Jaguars were, like when you want to let the little kids score a touchdown at the end of the meaningless game and everyone sort of gives pursuit, but not really. We're not actually going to tackle him. We'll let him have his moment and score. And it just looked like that. Rudy Ford, right? Coming back to this game, we're going to spend 20 minutes on this game. Rudy Ford is like, he's making a run toward Wilson on the sideline, and he just sort of like lets up and just sort of like coasts off to the side and just like, what is going on here? What is happening in this game? Why are they playing this? Anyways, every time I see the Falcons this year, it's just deflating.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and in comparison, Falcons-Lions, we will probably never talk about again.
Exactly. Matt Ryan, Tim Boyle, Jack Fox, the punter, had the best throw of the day. That's about it.
Neither of Trevor Lawrence nor Zach Wilson will be on their current franchises in 5 years when we're talking about this, and one of them won't be in the NFL.
Ooh, I don't like that part.
I don't like it. I mean, I don't like anybody not having the chance to pursue their dreams. It's not like I'm like, yeah, one of you guys is
really
gonna
took
have,
a turn.
One of you guys is going to have a bad time, but like, it's going to happen, you know. Sorry.
Well, I hope everyone had a great Christmas out there. 2 weeks to go. The angriest end to a show we've had all season. I love it.
Ba-na-na.
The MMQB NFL podcast is Jenny Brentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Grandling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, and Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.